Thank you very much, Brian. A reminder that coming up this hour, we'll be telling you everything you need to know about ovarian cancer with oncologist Professor Donal Brennan. So if you have any questions for Donal about the symptoms, the treatment and outlook, you can get them into us now. 51551 is the text number, or if you prefer to email todaycb@rte.ie. Now, though, extreme temperatures are forecast in Western Europe over the coming days, with parts of Spain set to reach up to 42 degrees. Spain's meteorological agency said it will be a truly unusual episode for the time. This comes as India and Pakistan experienced exceptional weather conditions in recent weeks. In a moment, I'll speak to Sive O'Neill, who's lecturing climate policy at the DCU Centre. But first, I'm joined on the line by Guy Hedgeco, freelance journalist in Madrid. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire.
So the temperatures have been increasing, have they, in Madrid over the last few days?
Yes, they have. We had a relatively moderate spring. And then just over the last few days, the temperatures have been climbing very sharply here in Madrid and around the country. I mean, at the moment right now, it's in the mid-20s here in Madrid, but we're told the temperatures are going to keep climbing up to the mid-30s today is what we're expecting. And then that's going to increase further tomorrow, and other parts of the country are going to see even higher temperatures, as you say, up to 42 degrees in some areas in the south, for example, possibly tomorrow, which would be extremely unusual.
And is there much discussion there about the effect of climate change when you see temperatures hitting these levels?
Yes, I mean, I think inevitably, whenever we have a really serious heat wave or an unusual heat wave due to the temperatures or the time of year that it happens at, people start talking about that. And there's been a lot of talk about the fact that this is happening at this time of year, because these sort of temperatures are quite normal later in the summer, you know, around July and August. It's quite normal to have temperatures up in the mid or even high 30s. It's the fact that this is happening now in mid-May. That's so unusual. And we're told that this, if the temperatures do reach 40 degrees, that would be only the fourth time since records began that temperatures have been recorded at over 40 in the month of May. So that's what makes it so unusual. And people are saying that this it seems to be a trend which has been increasing over the last few years, certainly the last two decades or so. We've seen more and more of these unusual weather patterns, earlier high temperatures or longer summers.
And so the concerns then expressed by government, what is being said around what could happen over the coming days? Are the concerns, for example, around wildfires, which I know happen later in the year?
Yes, I mean, the obvious concern is for people, and there is an alert system, a colour alert system, yellow and then orange and then red when it gets really serious. We're told that some areas will be on orange alert tomorrow, which signifies significant risk. And the advice there is for people to stay indoors and to drink lots of water and basically to avoid going outside as much as possible, particularly in the afternoon when it gets particularly hot. But the other concern is wildfires. And that's something which Spain has to handle every summer. In July and August, that's always a problem in many areas of the country, particularly rural areas, obviously. But the concern is that that's going to start even earlier this year.
Guy, stay with us because we're going to come back to you to talk to you about a separate story in just a moment. But for more on this now, I'm joined by Sive O'Neill, lecturer in climate policy at DCU. Sive, thank you for joining us again on the programme. Weather events like this are not unique, but what we're seeing now is the linking up of all of these situations around the world, and everything is pointing to climate change.
Yes, exactly, Claire. So as the WMO, the World Meteorological Organization, said yesterday when they were launching their State of the Climate report, extreme weather is the day-to-day face of the climate emergency. So while we get reports on a daily basis of high temperatures here or extreme weather events there or flooding or drought situations, it's the ability to connect the dots. And the climate science has been warning us for three decades that failure to stop burning fossil fuels would lead to exactly these situations: extreme weather events, increased rainfall, increased droughts, more frequent and more severe storms, wildfires, sea level rise, water scarcity, reduced crop yields, heat stress, melting glaciers and loss of Arctic ice. So this is all baked in because we have been releasing emissions by burning fossil fuels for the last 150 years. And even though the climate science has been telling us to stop, we still haven't done that.
OK, and we can expect this unfolding emergency to continue and for all of those things that you've just outlined to become much worse.
Unfortunately, yes. A lot of the climate change that we are experiencing now is as a result of emissions that were put into the atmosphere many decades ago. So there's a lag effect. We need to be conscious that even if we stop burning fossil fuels today, which is very unlikely, there will still be some climatic effect for some time. So it's a very complex system. You're talking about gigantic, complex Earth-scale systems where ocean systems and land weather systems and biodiversity and also human beings and our economic activities all interact with each other. So it's a very complex dynamic, which means we need to look for solutions that address the complexity of the causes and the drivers.
And do you see that there is any urgency around this now, despite all of the reports that we've had and all of the warnings?
Yes, I think that's exactly the question. I think the penny has not dropped. We know for the last couple of decades that action was delayed because of climate denial, corporate influence over policies, and a political reluctance to take on the major fossil fuel industry incumbents. Now, there's growing recognition by governments, and obviously they're making declarations every other day of a climate emergency. But the reactions and the policy responses are still more like business as usual. So the big issue is probably a fear of creating stranded assets. And the best way we can avoid creating, you know, losses like financial and economic losses is to stop investing in more fossil fuels and to set up an emergency response very similar to what we had with COVID. Sort of imagine a societal response that prioritizes climate action, that protects and enhances the environment over other economic considerations, that mobilizes whatever economic and institutional resources are necessary, and organizes people and informs and communicates directly with people about the scale of it. I was saying earlier to your researcher that when COVID happened, we had even stickers on the ground telling us what 2 meters looked like. We got leaflets into our households. We had very clear instructions about what we were to do and what we were not to do. But we're not getting anything like that from our governments. We don't have a national plan for risk and resilience. We're not food secure. We're not energy secure. And we don't have a kind of central body in the state that's coordinating a scientific response to this crisis.
Mm-hmm. And as part of that, and you mentioned this, the World Meteorological Organization, the UN's WMO, as part of that report yesterday, they outlined, didn't they, how we need this warning system now around what might be coming in the immediate term when it comes to weather events.
Absolutely. A critical recommendation that they have been making for some time is that the whole world needs to have an early warning system in place so that when extreme weather events are coming, that people are given advance notice of that. We saw in Germany when the extreme flooding events happened last year that, in fact, the early warning system didn't quite work in terms of getting people out of their houses in time to escape the rising flood waters. So we can see how important it is to get that in place. But the reality is that in practice, we need to get off fossil fuels. So the WMO and the UN have told us again, not for the first time, that we need to have global emissions by 2030. And that means speeding up renewables deployment, fast-tracking the permitting if necessary. We need to have a plan to share the scarce energy resources we have equitably. And if that means halting new energy-intensive industries or data centres or whatever, so be it. We need, at a global level, to focus on technology transfer to developing countries and lift intellectual property restrictions.
All right.
So there's lots we can do.
There certainly is, but we need to do it yesterday. Saib, thank you very much for joining us. Saib O'Neill, lecturer in climate policy at DCU. Now, I want to come back to Guy Hedgeco, who is still on the line from Madrid. And Spain's former king, Juan Carlos, is returning to the country today. Now, this is fascinating because Juan Carlos has been in exile for nearly 2 years in the UAE. So explain to us what's going on and how we've gotten to this point.
Well, 2 years ago in the summer of 2020, Juan Carlos, who abdicated in 2014, he fled to Abu Dhabi amid a cloud of scandal surrounding his financial affairs. The feeling on the part of the royal family that was it was simply better for him to be out of the country because there was such media interest around his financial affairs, which were being investigated by the Supreme Court. Now, a few months ago, all those investigations were shelved. In theory, there are no legal cases against him here in Spain, so he's free to come back. He's chosen this moment to come and visit the country. He's only going to come for the weekend before flying back to Abu Dhabi, but he will go to San Genjo, a town on the coast of Galicia in the northwest of the country, for a sailing regatta and to visit friends. He'll be there for the weekend, and this is the first time that he will have returned since he left the country to go into self-exile two years ago.
He was 40 years in power as king. He was well regarded, I think it's fair to say, until this scandal broke. But now he has to ask permission from his son to return home.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it really is a tale of two halves of a reign, because, as you say, for decades, he had tremendous respect and credibility from the Spanish people, even people who weren't necessarily supporters of the monarchy more broadly, did tend to support Juan Carlos because he was absolutely instrumental in helping usher in democracy in the late 1970s after the death of dictator Francisco Franco. And he was seen as a key figure there in cementing that parliamentary democracy. And I think for the following decades, he enjoyed that credibility. He didn't lose it, it didn't slip until about a decade ago, the scandals started. There was one particular scandal when it was revealed that he'd been on holiday in Botswana hunting elephants with his lover, a woman called Corina Suzine Wittgenstein. This all came out a decade ago. And then since then, we've had these other financial scandals, which have further eroded his credibility and his image. And that's been very bad, not just for him and his legacy, but for the crown as a whole, the monarchy as a whole. And it's been very difficult for his son, who's now king, to try and recover that credibility for the monarchy.
And Corina, who you mentioned there, she's suing him now, is she?
Sorry, the line broke up there.
Corina, his ex-partner, the woman he was elephant hunting with, she's taking an action against him now in the UK.
Yes, she is. And this is a separate case from his financial affairs. But she says that after their relationship fell apart, he waged a campaign of harassment against her, part of which took place in the UK, where she has a property, and that members of the Spanish intelligence services were involved in threatening her and harassing her. And just a couple of months ago, a court in the UK ruled that Juan Carlos cannot be protected from facing a court case because of his regal immunity, that he can't use the immunity issue to protect himself from going to court and facing a court case to face these charges. So it's quite possible that he could be brought to court for that
case. Well, it's fascinating. And he'll be back in Spain after 2 years this weekend. Guy Hedgeco in Madrid, thank you very much for joining us. Coming up next on the programme, we will be speaking to Professor Donal Brennan, who is Professor of Gynecological Oncology. So any questions that you have about ovarian cancer, Professor Brennan will be taking them all this morning, 51551.